Hello, and welcome to Rapid Fire, a podcast hosted by Firedex, dedicated to sharing best practices and lessons learned in hopes of making firefighting a little bit safer. I'm your host, Bob Keyes, retired battalion chief from FDNY. We're fortunate to be joined today by Todd LaDuc, retired assistant fire chief of Broward County, Florida. Todd now works as the chief strategy officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers. We're also fortunate to have active fire lieutenant Rob Brown, who works at FDNY in Squad 41 in the Bronx. Rob is also the founder of New York Firefighters Heart and Lung, and Rob is also a physician's assistant. How are you gentlemen doing today, Todd?
Doing great. Thanks, Bob, for having us on. Excited to have a great conversation today and talk about some serious issues confronting the fire service.
Great, thank you. Rob, how's your day going?
Yeah, all good over here in New York. You know, things are getting better with the pandemic. Things are moving forward. Things are opening up. So people are happier, and especially me and most of my family members. So it's all good here in New York.
Great. Great to hear. Yeah, I did have many thoughts and plans on getting back to New York more often than prior to COVID, but life has changed for all of us, and hopefully we'll get through this all together and stay healthy. Thank you guys both for your time today. Really appreciate what you do and what you're doing for the fire service. So today we're going to discuss firefighter health and regular monitoring. And this is so very important now more than ever before. Before we get started, I'd like to ask each of our participants to take a minute or less to tell everyone an interesting fact or an event in their career. Chief LaDuc?
Sure, absolutely. It's actually how I started my career, in that my passion for getting into the service. I had the opportunity when I was in my high school years of having an incident where my grandmother collapsed while I was on the phone with her, and we lived not too far away. We made a mad dash over there, and she was unresponsive on the floor, and turned out she was in pulmonary edema, or congestive heart failure. And I watched the magic of the emergency medical services system, the first responders, the fire system, and at the time, paramedics, so we're hospital-based paramedics, resuscitate her. So made a lasting impression on me, and I was in high school at the time. I started with EMT training, and after that, paramedic training and fire academy, and led to 34 years of service. So always remember that moment, and really made an impression on myself and defined my desire to serve the community.
That's a great story, and so similar. I hear so many firefighters get that call of feeling to be able to serve others and help out. Totally a rewarding career that you've had. Rob, want to tell us something interesting about your career?
Yeah, I've been blessed to work in many great places in the FDNY, and I'm just finishing up my 25th year now. Every place I've been, I've had special events, but most recently, I would say, just like we were speaking yesterday, is I got a phone call last Thursday, and the company that I work in, Squad 41, is part of the Special Operations Command in the FDNY, and we respond to all types of incidents, whether it's drowning in the water, building collapse, hazmat, major fire, technical rescue. We handle all of that from 80th Street up in Manhattan and about half of the Bronx. And we responded back in September during the pandemic to a fire on 158th Street up in Washington Heights, where the members were encountered heavy fire conditions with multiple people trapped, on reports of a family of nine still trapped in an apartment above the fire. And we were able to get in very quick. And my members were able to work in two different teams, and we were able to rescue along with Ladder 23 and Ladder 34 and a couple other units on scene, over 11 people that were trapped in this fire. And two of those rescues were made via roof rope, life-saving rope without an anchor on the roof, meaning that the weight of the firefighter going over on a rope, life-saving rope, to pick somebody up that's trapped at a window ready to jump out, they usually, when there's heavy fire like this, it stalls the inside teams from getting into those apartments. So those people have no way out except the fire escape or to jump, and they were seven stories up. So the members of 34 and 23 had decided they were going to start a roof rope rescue. I sent two of my guys up to the roof to assist with them in the process of them doing the roof rope rescue. The woman who was handing a baby out of the window, when the baby was handed off to the firefighter and they started lowering him to the ground, the woman tried to jump out of the window and got hung up on the child gates, and one of the members was alerted to this, and they ended up, two of my team members strapped in and hooked in and went over the rope, a firefighter Castro and firefighter Ingerson. And again, they, firefighter Ingerson, who lowered the member, usually the operation's done while you're anchored, but they didn't have a substantial object and they had absolutely no time to be aware of it, to time to save, and they were able to get him over on the rope. And it was just an amazing operation. And last Thursday, the department called us up and said that we were getting the highest medal, the 9/11 El Sasso medal, for rescuing all these people and helping at this fire, which to me in 25 years is the pinnacle when you have a great team work, team operation, and it's recognized by your peers. It's really an amazing accomplishment that I'm so proud of the guys that I work with now. And it's nice to get recognized for what, you know, you're willing to do every day, each and every day, the guys that are out there, out in the field, taking in all the runs, putting themselves on the line. Those people all deserve to be recognized. But when your team gets to be, you know, standing up on the podium to honor all of the sacrifice of all the firefighters that work every day, it's pretty cool. So it's probably the pinnacle of my career. And I know you have a very similar story, Chief.
Yeah, that's funny that we chatted about this the other day. The El Sasso Medal, for people who don't know, is only awarded to one company each year. And it's the company that had the most outstanding unit citation or unit recognition. To get a unit citation, you have to go above and beyond what's normally expected of you and make a huge difference in the outcome of people's lives or a fire. And to be honored like that is amazing. And it was also the pinnacle of my career. Back in 1993, when I was a lieutenant in Ladder 24, we had a very challenging fire operating on the floor above a fire in a Manhattan hotel, a non-fireproof building. And then a flashover occurred, and some members from Engine 23 were trapped. And guys from Ladder 24, my team, were able to get in and rescue them and get them out. And along with lots of other great heroic actions, they did that. But we too were awarded the El Sasso for 1993. And it was a great experience standing on the steps of City Hall with my whole family there and our whole team. A great honor. And congratulations to you and the guys from Squad 41. I remember reading about that job. Sounded like all hell broke loose and you guys made a big difference. So congratulations, Rob.
Thank you. Thank you.
So guys, I'd like to now get to the very important topic of today's podcast. As we all know, fire departments across the country have been doing a better job of educating their members about the statistics that show firefighters are way more likely to contract cancer than non-firefighters. We have seen much more protective bunker gear, and particularly the new particulate blocking hoods that are keeping the carcinogens off the firefighter's face and neck. We're washing our PPE more often and working towards cleaner cabs for our apparatus. We're staying on air throughout overhaul with initiatives like Boston's Take No Smoke program, but there is much more that we can do. Our two guests today are doing amazing work in helping firefighters get regular health checkups and diagnosed early, making a huge difference in the outcomes of what could otherwise have been a fatal illness. Todd, can you please share with our listeners what LifeScan Wellness is all about and their philosophy?
Sure. Happy to do that. As you guys were both talking about your tremendous careers and service at FDNY, and my hat's off to both you and the entire department for all you do. I couldn't help but remember I got a little FDNY in my blood. I actually did my field internship with, I guess that was New York City EMS back in the day. So spent some time responding to calls in the city, and I have the utmost respect for the department, and so I'm glad to be joining you guys today. As you mentioned, I'm the Chief Strategy Officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers. So LifeScan started 23 years ago, serving a unique need within, at the time, Florida, was early detection and medical surveillance for both firefighters and law enforcement officers. And since that time, we've evolved into now 25 states, seeing close to 50,000 first responders a year. We actually have a handful of bricks and mortar clinics for some of our larger departments that we service. And the majority of what we do is we come on site with a three-person clinical team, which consists of a nurse practitioner, an exercise physiologist, and a ultrasound technician. Prior to us getting there, we coordinate blood draws, so we will have labs when we see the first responder. And then we engage each first responder with a three-hour comprehensive physical that includes the NFPA 1582, head-to-toe physical exam done by the nurse practitioner. It incorporates NFPA 1583 fitness assessment, and that's done by the exercise physiologist. And then somewhat unique to us, we also have for 23 years incorporated ultrasound imaging. So in addition to the physical exam and the 1583 assessment, which includes a 12-lead stress test, we also use ultrasound imaging to look at some of the vasculature, the left ventricle, ventricular function, the aorta, the abdominal organs. And then in men, we do ultrasound of the testicles, and in women, external pelvic cavity. So we exclusively, for the most part, only see first responders. So our 20 some odd clinical teams that we have throughout the country are very up to speed on the evolving research within first responders and in the NFPA standards and guidelines that guide our care for the first responders. For me, I gotta say, it's been just terrific. It's been so rewarding to spend 30 years in Broward as assistant chief and then be able to now work for an organization that almost not a day goes by that I don't hear a phone call or an email that we found an early detection of whether it be a cancer or early cardiac issue that we're able to diagnose firefighter occupational threats to health early and be able to intervene and treat them early, which leads to better outcomes. And, you know, for me, and I know for both of you, it's all about, you know, making sure that our first responders are able to do their career, serve safely and serve healthy, and then enjoy a long retirement for the fruits of their labor. It's been really a tremendous experience for me to continue to give back to the fire service in that capacity.
Thank you for what you do, and thank you for explaining that. Truly is no greater honor than to protect those that serve, and that's exactly what you guys are doing. Rob, can you explain to our listeners, is New York firefighters' heart and lungs similar to LifeScan, or is it different, and how so?
Well, we're just in a fixed medical facility in New York, and I mostly see New York City firefighters or first responders, but over the years, we've been asked to help out with a family member or a friend or a neighbor or something. And, you know, anybody that needs access to care, we always try and do whatever we can to help them out. But predominantly, yeah, the mission is to prevent line of duty deaths. And that's what we've been working on. And I'm in my 20th year now as a PA. I graduated in about 3 months before September 11th. And this program started out just by chance with helping a senior guy in my firehouse that was a little bit older than me. I was like 24, I guess, at the time. And he was probably 47 and he was having some chest pain or whatever. I said, listen, I work in an office. We do these stress tests. Why don't you just come in and have a stress test? I mean, every fireman should have a stress test anyway. You should do it. And he came in and we found some heart disease in them, and the rest is history. You know, from there, we've probably saved at least over 150 guys that, in my estimation, maybe 30% of those would have been a line of duty death, which is about 50 guys we were able to keep off the wall of honor down at headquarters for the FDNY. And then as it's evolved over the years, we've been doing a lot of cancer screenings. The number one cancer I'm finding right now is thyroid cancer. And I think we need to rethink, you know, how we train our members to get dressed for different runs and how we utilize the hood and an area of protection that we need, but we only need it during certain operations. And I think we not only can, to your mission of trying to get better gear for guys, that's one of the areas that's probably the biggest problem set that we're going to see in the next 10 to 15 years is explosion of thyroid cancer for firefighters. But yeah, so we've had a lot of impact. You know, we've helped wives of firemen that have had cancer. We've helped wives that have had heart disease. It's come to the point where I see a guy at the Rock or a training academy or at headquarters or just out at a fire or anything, and they usually say, hey, you know, I'm sorry. I know I'm supposed to see you. I forgot to make my appointment or whatever it is. And I said, hey, listen, we see either two things. Once we either see you before there's a problem or we'll see you after there's a problem, but most likely we're going to see you. I prefer to see you before the problem so we can find it early and fix it. But it's hard to penetrate a community that has to feel invincible in order to do their job right. And that's the truth behind it, right? That's the secret sauce. So call it the invincibility complex, right? You know, I meet them when they're healthy, usually. And then on the extreme ends, I walk them through surgery to remove a section of the colon because they have a tumor in there. and coordinating with the surgeon, and I become the quarterback of the case for him. So I get to talk to firefighters a lot. And if you thought kids had excuses at school for not turning their homework, I had a guy 2 weeks ago that I saw 3 years ago, and he came into the office. There's a couple things I'm looking back. I'm going, well, colonoscopy, I don't have the report. Where's that? He's, oh, yeah, I didn't go for that. What about this? He pulls out his wallet, and he's got one of those big old wallets, right? And in the section where you keep your money, he pulls out three prescriptions that I wrote for a colonoscopy, a thyroid scan, and blood work. And he goes, you think these are still good? I was like, are you kidding me? You're telling me you had those scripts in every day. You got to go in there a couple times a day to get money out to pay for things. And you saw those scripts in there for 3 years and you never went to get them done. He goes, yeah, no, I don't know. What do you want me to tell you? So, you know, we're a different animal. We're a different breed. And it's hard for us to admit that something could potentially be vulnerable in our body. And they, unfortunately, in the past, we've buried our hands in the sand, and that was the way we dealt with it. But I think guys are getting smarter, and, you know, the fire service is getting smarter about how to talk about it and educate about it. And I think the message has to resonate the right way, but the message has to resonate the way that the firefighter can hear it.
And trust it. And the very fact that both of your businesses are booming is proof that the message is getting out.
Yes.
That is. That's a good thing.
You know, at the end of the day, that's how you're going to make the difference.
Sure.
Not in building collapse, not in, you know, structural integrity, all that's super important. At the end of the day, we owe it to firefighters. It's a moral obligation that we have as a society to take care of those people, expect to work in environments that are deadly, not only to themselves at the moment, but because of what they're going to be exposed to. And I think the more that we get that message up through the chain of command in the legislature on the federal level, the easier it'll be for the locals to be able to go and access money to start these programs and keep them going, because that's something that the employer, the citizens, right, because we all work for the government, we owe it to those people. And I owe it to the next generation of firefighters to make the job just a little bit better than when I found it. And that's, you know, what I hope that, you know, we're trying to accomplish here. I think that's the mission statement of what Todd's trying to do as well, is the access to care, educating the members and making sure that they're not putting themselves in greater risk. And the greatest risk to firefighters is not the fire ground, it's the contaminants on the fire ground. And we're learning more and more each day about that. And not only how it affects the body and developing cancer more rapidly than it would in somebody else that doesn't have that exposure, moderate chronic exposure or extreme exposure with events like 9/11 or the Deutsche Bank, or you can pick different areas where there have been hazmat fires all over the country that, you know, these members need to be monitored, they need to be cared for. When we're asking people to put themselves in harm's way, we have a responsibility, the public has a responsibility, and the departments have a responsibility to take care of them and to make sure that they're being monitored, and we're doing everything that we can to find it early so that the next person that jumps in that seat and is willing to put their life on the line and their family's lives on the line will understand that the departments are looking out for them and that the people care about them, and that if God forbid something was to happen to that member, that their family is going to be taken care of for the rest of their lives. And if we don't keep that up, and if we don't do that, and if we don't understand that that's the big risk of today, then I think we're doing a disservice to the fire service in the future, and the public is going to lose. Because if you don't take care of the firefighters, that guy's not going to push himself to the point so that he can get to that back bedroom and save your kid that's trapped in there. And I think that that's important for people to understand that. And you don't have to look too far away than back to Katrina, where it's, you know, that state has not a lot of protections for those workers. And they lost a lot of firefighters that said, you know, I'm going to go with my family to Texas and relocate. And, you know, and you didn't see that in New York after 9/11. New York has great protections, and it's one of the things that the New York City Fire Department does is, you know, they do a good job at taking care of the members. They've been first and foremost at getting the medicals up and running, although we're having a little tough time with that right now because of the pandemic. It puts a little more weight on my shoulders because guys come to see me for the regular physical because they don't have access to the medicals on the department now.
Very good information there. I've heard it said by somebody smarter than me that with modern building materials and the things that are being stored inside homes, that structure fires are more hazmat than hazmat runs are. And we don't take nearly the same precautions to protect ourselves at a structure fire than we do at hazmat runs. So the education piece is ongoing and needs to continue. And the message that you're sending out there and both of you guys are sending out there is so valuable, needs to be picked up and heard. Todd, do you have any similar stories that would prove interesting for a firefighter who's contemplating coming in for an examination, somebody who's asymptomatic but goes for the exam anyway and has a revelation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we, as I mentioned, and as Rob said, I mean, the goal on this is early detection, right? Because by the time symptoms often are present, there's already been a progression of the disease process, whether that's we're talking about cancer or cardiovascular disease. I could go on literally all day just with examples, but the one that sticks in my mind is a 43-year-old special ops captain on a large metro department. And this captain had gone through the year prior, so had the complete 3-hour exam with the NFPA 1582 physical, the NFPA 1583 fitness assessment, the stress testing, all the ultrasound imaging, the lab work, everything was picture perfect. Just really had a very clean exam. And he went back on shift. And just this past year, came in, a year had passed, and it was the department time for the department physical. And he completely felt fine. Came in, again, 43 years old. In the course of his exam this year, we were able to identify a mass within the bladder on ultrasound imaging, and it was suspicious and required follow-up with, in this case, urology. So this firefighter, I don't want to say what department, but they reached out to one of the top urologists in the region, and that urologist was not seeing new patients, but was keen enough that when he heard a 43-year-old firefighter, so obviously he knew that firefighters have higher rates of certain types of cancer, was asymptomatic but had a mass on bladder imaging, he said, you know what, I'll see you at 9 a.m. the following morning. So he was able to get in quickly, and he tells the story. The urologist said, I don't even need to do really any further testing, just looking at that imaging, looking at the mass, the irregularity, it's cancer. And he went on to have a great outcome. He had, of course, a treatment that was really successful because we caught this thing so early. And that's the goal, early detection. But you know what stuck in my mind, Bob? And I'm sure Rob sees this in his practice. You know, the urologist said, I've been practicing for 3 decades, and you're the first asymptomatic presentation of a bladder cancer that I've seen in my practice. And it's because it was picked up on the imaging. And I'm sure Rob will tell you on the cardiac side, you know, like in cancer, if we find a pre-cancer or a stage 1, so the cancer is isolated to the primary site of origin, as in this case, the bladder, survival, 5-year survival on the cancer front is in the high 90s to close to 100% in almost every type of cancer. But, you know, once symptoms are present and that cancer has spread outside the primary site of origin, whether that's through the lymph nodes or the blood system or other organs, those survival rates really, you know, start dropping dramatically. So the goal for all of us is to find these things at the earliest stage. So in this case, this captain, you know, he had his treatment and he's back to work. He's on the job, healthy, cancer-free, and we'll keep a close eye on him every year with his department physical. His oncologist will keep a close eye on him, but he's going to go on and have a healthy, successful career and hopefully enjoy a long, long retirement.
What a great story.
Strong work.
I'm sure you see this. I mean, it's the part that makes it so rewarding when you get either a family member that says thank you, or you know, a brother or sister firefighter that says, listen, I'm alive today because of early detection. We've grown from just really the entire state of Florida to now being in multiple states, seeing close to 50,000. And so those stories are just so impactful.
They're going to pile up.
Yeah, they do. That's what we're going to make it a safer service. It's all about making sure folks go home at the end of the shift and we keep them safe and keep them healthy and so they can get their time in and retire and enjoy time with family.
Amen. I agree with that 100%.
We need smart, aggressive firefighters on and off the fire ground.
That's, Rob, you mentioned an interesting quote to me yesterday when we spoke. You said that much of your day, you translate science into fireman speak.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that very much. I struggle even pronouncing some of the names of the medications I take. I don't have a science background.
Can you
expand on what you do and how you help firefighters understand and get the proper treatment they need?
Yeah, well, it's probably my favorite word in the whole world, and I wish I could take credit for it, knowledge translation. I learned it at a Congressional Fire Service dinner. I got to meet a psychologist that worked for the chief of the St. Louis Fire Department through Dr. Dennis O'Neill, and we talked for about 5 minutes, and within that 5 minutes, he mentioned the term knowledge translation, and it stuck in my head for all these years, probably, I don't know, might have been 12, 15 years ago when you'd said it. And I said, that's the $1 million thing, is that translating information to what people can understand is why I exist. And I'm not smart. I'm a fireman, right? Just like we said the other day, we're not the brightest, we're the bravest, right? And thank God we're not, because if we were really smart, we probably wouldn't do what we have to do to save lives, right? Who would be running into a burning building, you know? So at the end of the day, we're happy that we're brave, but we need firefighters to be smart, and they need to be smart aggressive. Every firefighter wants to be smart, but every firefighter also wants the other firefighters to think that they're aggressive too. So the problem is if you're aggressive all the time, you can make mistakes. And most of the times when we have major problems on the fire ground is that we get ahead of ourselves, or in skiing terms, we're over the tips of our skis. And that's because we're not being smart aggressive. And smart aggressive is, you know, putting yourself in the right place at the right time so that you can effect a rescue and save a life. And not every day you're going to be the bride, and not every day you're going to be that person. But there are things that you need to do off the fire ground to make sure that you can put yourself in the best spot there is to be able to make that rescue when it might be your time. And part of that is training. Part of that is understanding risk. Part of that is talking to firefighters that have been there and done that before. And part of it is checking the equipment on the truck, just as simple as checking the saw, right? And if I told you, when we look back at the last 100 line of duty deaths, that about 40% of line of duty deaths were because the roof firefighter put the saw on backwards, what would you do? You know, I think most firefighters that are out there would make sure that every time that they had that roof before their tour started, that they would check that saw. And they would make sure that blade was on right, because there's no way that they would let that saw and their position fail the other members on that fire ground, because this is the biggest problem on the fire department. And there's no way that when it's your turn in the queue that you're going to let your failing to make sure that the saw is going to work properly when it's needed to do that. And most of us would say that. Well, the saw isn't the most important piece of equipment on the fire ground, and the saw isn't the leading cause of death in the fire service for line of duty active deaths. It's heart disease, and it's making sure that your pump is working properly so that when you go on the fire ground and you're going to operate the saw, that you're not going to fail and your body's not going to fail. That's really the message that we need to get out there, is that the firefighter and the fire officer, they're the most important piece of equipment on the fire ground. And we need to make sure when we're asking people to put themselves in harm's way and run up 15 flights of stairs to put out a fire or save somebody, that the most important piece of equipment, which is that firefighter, is ready to go and fit for duty, and they're not going to drop dead from the leading cause of death on the fire ground, which is heart attacks. It sounds simple, but we're still struggling to get that number pushed down, although it's been better. But in the FDNY 2001, one of the things that people forget is that prior to 9/11 that year, we lost 10 firefighters, 7 firefighters from heart disease, heart attacks in the line of duty that year. Since 2002, we were able to drop that number through the fire department starting the medical program, the private-public partnerships that they have with the organizations like mine, dealing with the unions and making sure that, you know, people are, you know, it's not an adversarial process, right? The medical for most firefighters, the biggest fear firefighters have is getting pulled off the line. So if that's the case, then you make sure that the medicals aren't going to be something that is going to be penalizing to the firefighter, or that threat of getting pulled off line is not there, so that, you know, they can make sure that they have nothing life-threatening going on, right? So if you're going to pull a guy off line for blood pressure, well, if the guy goes and gets medicine and he's on the right medicine, his blood pressure is normal, and he goes for his medical, he's going to be okay, and he's going to pass his medical and be full duty. But we need to get that message out there. We need to make sure departments understand that that's a real, there's a real tension or a real wall between medical offices, right? The occupational medical office and the firefighters in the field. And bridging that gap and breaking down that wall is something that needs to be done so that we can make sure more firefighters go home to their families.
It brings to mind the cooperative relationship that took place in the last 8 years in Boston, where the city, the union, and the fire chief all came together to make a difference, to change the culture, and that Take No Smoke program I talked about a few minutes ago. You're 100% right. In order to make a difference in firefighters' lives, it needs to be non-punitive. It needs to be everybody working together for the same goal, is to keep those firefighters healthy, keep them alive while working together and not punishing them. Todd, you shared with me recently that many fire departments around the country signed up to have LifeScan evaluate all of their firefighters on an annual basis. If a firefighter is listening to this podcast and wants his department to look into this kind of annual exam, what should they do?
Absolutely. That's a great point. And I know FDNY is blessed to have the resources of, like Rob and my department that I retired from is blessed to have the resources. But a lot of departments are still looking at how do they do this and how can they bring NFPA physicals with the way we do it by coming on site and really being turnkey. And the easiest way to get that information is just to visit our website, www.lifescanwellness.com. I think about it this way. There's probably not a fire department in the country that wouldn't think of not maintaining their apparatus, right, and have a fleet preventative maintenance program. And we really need to think about that same kind of mentality with our members, with our firefighters, because within the course of even a year, cancer can grow so much, cardiovascular issues, hypertension can get a tremendous toll on the body and put that member at elevated risk for sudden death, line of duty death. So if you're interested in more information, I'd love to have that dialogue with you. We have departments coming on both on the law enforcement side and on the public safety fire side. So it's a total approach to just taking care of our first responders.
Rob, I worked with your dad when he was a battalion chief in the 4th Battalion in Brooklyn. I was brand new battalion chief and he was very helpful to me. I remember him introducing you to me at a time you were on the promotion list to lieutenant. I just assumed that you would follow your dad's footsteps, become a chief officer as well. But your path and your career seems to me way more satisfying. You have made a difference in hundreds of firefighters' lives, if not more. Can you tell us how and why you founded New York Firefighters Heart and Lung?
Well, I first graduated PA schools in July of 2001, and I started doing plastic surgery. So I would work my two night tours and I'd go to the office in between and I'd come into the firehouse around 4:30, 5 o'clock and sitting around, have coffee and everybody would sit around and they'd say, what did you do today? Hey, Joe, what did you do? I was at Billy's house. I was fixing his plumbing. He was a plumber. And there's a roofer and they said, hey, Joe, what'd you? Oh, I was over at Dave's house. I was helping him fix his roof. And they go, what were you doing today, Brown? I said, well, I did two nose jobs and an eye lift and a chin tuck. Like, what? And I said, oh, yeah, no, I do plastic surgery on the side. So long story endless. I started the heart and lung based upon, just the need that was there. We were killing firefighters. We were killing firefighters. When bunker gear came on scene, it was putting a tremendous strain on each and every firefighter. There was a life safety conference. And then the big push was, how do we push down line of duty deaths? I said, all you got to do is do a 50% reduction if you start looking at firefighters and early screening them to make sure that they don't have heart disease. And we can identify the firefighters that are at the most highest risk for it. It's not that hard, but you have to incentivize them to do that, whether it's through health incentive bonuses or some sort of release time to go get testing or whatever it might be. That's how you're going to drive down that number. And the public-private partnership, which I can take a little credit for, but the department really takes the credit, is setting up the medical, investing in, one of the better medicals that's out there. But places like LifeScan and in New York, we have, the heart and lung, where we do those advanced screenings for them, where they might not be able to get it for their department. I have patients that are from Colombia. I got patients, retired firemen that live in Ireland, Florida, South Carolina, California, all over the place that come in once a year to get checked out because, you know, they're willing to fly or drive up to 2 hours. Some of these guys that come in because, you know, they understand that I know what they do and I know what they're at risk for. And I'm not going to give them a roundabout answer. I'm going to unfortunately tell them what's going on, you know, and I'll be real straight up with them. But that ability to do that drove down the line of duty deaths by over 60% from heart disease in the FDNY. When you look at the decade prior to 9/11 and the decade after 9/11, and you could look the same decade, 2010 to 2020, the reduction stayed the same. So it's a remarkable, remarkable thing. It can be done, right? What's that song? You know, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Well, if we can do firefighter health and safety in New York and we can drive down line of duty deaths in New York City Fire Department, then you can do it anywhere in the United States of America, right?
Absolutely. 100% agree with that statement. And congratulations to you and my hat's off to you for amazing accomplishments that you've made in a very challenging environment. I know that firsthand.
Just one more thing. It might be important to note, and I'm sure Todd's group is aware of this, is that COVID-19 is a real problem in the fire service. And the effects of COVID-19 on the heart, on the vasculature, are extraordinary. And any firefighter that has contracted COVID-19 and had some symptoms from it should have an echocardiogram to make sure that there is no damage. It can inflame the heart. It can weaken the heart, causing a myopathy that a normal heart functions at like 50, 60% in that range there. It can make it drop down to 20 to 30%, which can potentially kill somebody. And we've seen it in New York. I've had some patients that had it and had them admitted to the hospital and, you know, it caused a lot of damage. It's very, very bad for inflammation. It's basically in the fire service, if I was equated to a fire service term, they're sending a third alarm to a kitchen fire or a food on the stove in New York. You know what I'm saying in that regard, sure. But it just surges into an area. It attacks weaknesses in your body. It can accelerate disease processes. And it's very important for us to identify those firefighters and make sure that they're, you know, at least getting a simple screening like an echocardiogram and an EKG to make sure that they have no lingering effects from that. And that's why it's good for a firefighter in his early in his career to get a baseline so that if he does have an incident or we have incidents like this, we can go back and look and see where the damage was, right? So I don't know if the guy had the damage because he's 45 years old and he had an event or it's from COVID. But if at 35 he came in and we had an echocardiogram to compare to, we can see if he had damage that is lasting or if it's something that's going to bounce back. And so it makes it much easier for us to do our job at keeping him safe by the guys getting that first visit that we can use as a baseline.
Really valuable information. Thanks, Rob. Good to get that out so people understand the difference. I have heard that something very similar is going on in the NCAA, that anybody who has had COVID before they start a program, whether it's the football team or any other scholastic activity, they need to go for that echocardiogram first. And they have held some people out because of underperformance of their heart. So Todd, you recently shared with me that you went to the Texas Fire Chiefs Conference. I think the whole fire service across the country is dying to get together and be social. The conferences I've gone to in the past, probably the most rewarding part other than listening to the speakers, is getting together with colleagues from across the country that you haven't seen in a while, finding out how they're doing. Can you share with our audience the feeling of the firefighters you met with in Texas who have been fighting through this? I think you're the first one I know who's gone to a trade show in the past year. And I think folks would like to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. We are going to get together and socialize again.
Absolutely. You're spot on at the first trade show in 13 months for myself. And LifeScan was there, of course, as an exhibitor. And we were actually thrilled to be able to support the Texas Fire Chiefs. But I think the general consensus was, just as you said, Bob, was relief to be able to get back to some sense of normalcy. Most of the folks had been vaccinated, not only, you know, involved in distributing vaccinations throughout the community, but had been able to get their own vaccines within the department. There was still some social distance throughout, so the setup was maybe looked a little different than what we would remember pre-COVID, but it was a good example that you know, we can here round the bend shortly and get back to some sense of getting together, sharing best practices, fellowship, and networking. I know being on the board of directors of the International Fire Chiefs Safety, Health, and Survival section, we've made the decision to move forward with Fire Rescue International, which will be the end of July. That'll be in Charlotte. The footprint maybe is going to look a little bit different. We'll have to take some precautions, a lot of hand sanitizing stations, a little bit spread out between exhibits and seating arrangements. I think the Texas Chiefs showed that it can be done and can be done safely. It might just look a little bit different, but I think the feeling from everyone was just a great sense of, after a year of lockdown, that we're able to get back and share what we like to do as firefighters is, you know, get together and have fellowship and share stories, and great being able to get out. And I'm thrilled that we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel.
Thanks for the optimism. I, for one, I'm dying to get out and see some of my friends I haven't seen in a year and a half or so. Guys, thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge. Thank you for your dedication to protecting firefighters. Thank you for getting this message out and continuing to make a difference in our society, our culture. I look forward to meeting with you guys in person in the future. To our listeners, if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, there's many others. Please log on to firedex.com and search for Rapid Fire, the name of our podcast. And send us messages. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you'd like to hear. And we look forward to getting messages out to make a difference, make firefighters a little bit safer. Rob and Todd, thank you guys both very much. Have a great weekend. Take care.
You as well. Thanks for having us on. Stay safe.
Good luck, Todd. Take care. Bye, Bob.